This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. On Monday, Virginia state lawmakers go into special session. At issue, the need for a new state budget, something upon which lawmakers could not agree during their recent regular session. But really, there is just one sticking point: what to do about health care for the poor. The state Senate has proposed a kind of health insurance marketplace, saying that health coverage would be paid for mostly with federal dollars. The House of Delegates has said, no way. Two Republicans from our region have come down on different sides of the disagreement. We've asked Senator Emmett Hanger and Delegate Dickie Bell to talk with you and each other about that. Since the current stalemate is putting all of state government funding in doubt, you might want to join the conversation too, right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember the phone number for this talk show. Healthcare for the poor, what should Virginia do about it? That question is the major sticking point in the current stalemate over getting a new Virginia state budget. And if you've got thoughts about the issue, we want to hear from you at 888-967-2825. Augusta County Republican Dickie Bell is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, representing a district that includes the cities of Stanton and Waynesboro, the county of Highland, plus portions of Augusta and Nelson counties. Delegate Bell joining us for the first few minutes of the hour by phone. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be with you. Even by phone, I should be there in person in just a few minutes.
And you're going to be driving into our parking lot any moment now, followed, I think, by Augusta County Republican Emmett Hanger, who is a member of the Virginia Senate, representing a district that includes the cities of Stanton and Waynesboro, the counties of Augusta, Greene, and Madison, as well as portions of Rockingham and Culpeper counties. And Senator Hanger and you yourself, Delegate Bell, were chairing a meeting going on in Stanton that was originally expected to end a couple of hours ago, but you stayed with your responsibilities until the meeting could end, and that was only a short time ago, which is why both you and Senator Hanger are in your cars driving safely towards the WMRA studios in Harrisonburg.
That's right. The best laid plans, Tom, you know, it's you never know. We expected to be through by noon, and we had a few things come up in that meeting, and it just didn't happen. So,
And this was the Virginia School for the Deaf and Blind Board of Visitors. That you're the vice chair, and Senator Hanger is actually the chair of that group?
That's correct. Yep, that's correct.
So and, you guys stay busy in addition to all your state lawmaking work.
Well, we do. There are a lot of those things that go on that many folks aren't aware of, how many other duties that we have and perform, and we take them very seriously. It's important work in our communities, and we take that work very seriously. So, you know, we don't want to shortchange anybody. I'm sure Emmett feels the same way as I do, and sometimes you just it just happens that way.
And you and Emmett obviously are still on speaking terms, even though you are on completely different sides of what's working out to be a major sticky issue in Virginia. I understand from one of our producers that he just saw you drive in. Oh, look, we just saw Delegate Bell walk in. So while we're getting him set up in front of our microphone, let me tell you listening what my understanding is of this debate that some people call a debate over whether or not to expand Medicaid. Other people call a debate over whether or not to do something about the coverage gap for basically the working poor in Virginia. As you probably recall, this thing called the Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act was enacted by Congress back in 2010, back when Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate in Washington. Republicans soon began calling it Obamacare. People who liked it or who felt neutral about it generally referred to it as the Affordable Care Act, and Obamacare was often used as a derisive term. But now even the president says he's willing to call it Obamacare. So we may refer to it that way this hour. But one of the elements of so-called Obamacare was going to force every state in the nation to expand its Medicaid program. And when the Affordable Care Act was challenged and went to the U.S. Supreme Court for a decision on whether or not that final deciding body would find it constitutional, they did find almost all of it constitutional except that part about Medicaid, and said you can't force states to do this. They have to decide on a case-by-case basis whether they want to do it. So there are some states across the nation that decided to go ahead as originally planned under the Affordable Care Act and expanded Medicaid coverage for the poor. Virginia has not, at least not yet, and thus the quandary. Dickie Bell, now in front of our microphone here in the Virginia Insight studio. Was that a fair representation of the situation we find ourselves in?
I think that's pretty accurate, Tom. Let me just back up for 1 second, because you were talking about my relationship with Emmett when I came in, and Emmett and I are friends. We've been friends for a long time. We'll be friends when we leave here today, and we'll be friends regardless of the outcome of this. We just have differences of opinion. But yeah, your depiction there, I think, is very accurate. We took some steps in 2013 to deal with it, and right now we're hung up on we're sort of back where we were before we established this MIRC, this Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission, which was established so that we wouldn't have Medicaid as part of the budget process, so that we could deal with Medicaid expansion by itself, because it's a big, big issue. Things have gotten jammed up a little bit because it was reinserted into the budget process, and that's sort of where we are right now.
Let's, acknowledging that many of our listeners are highly conversant about national politics and probably can tell you much of the ins and outs of the Affordable Care Act on a national level. But we've often noticed that they're not as conversant with state politics. So some of the basics, Virginia has a two-house legislature, the General Assembly,
right,
the House of Delegates, which you are in, the State Senate, which Emmett is now in. Many years ago, he was in the House of Delegates.
Mm-hmm.
The State Senate has 40 members and currently is split evenly between 20 Democrats and 20 Republicans. But now that there is a presiding officer, the lieutenant governor, who is a Democrat, the Democrats, in essence, control that body. On the other hand, in your House, the House of Delegates, there are 100 members. And if I recall correctly, Dickie, there are a couple of independents who vote with Republicans. So in essence, you have about a 67-vote margin in the House of Delegates?
We actually have a 68 Republican majority now.
So only 32 Democrats.
Yeah, right.
And I think all of the Democrats in that House, who are obviously in a significant minority, have been in favor of Medicaid expansion of one form or another. All of the Democrats in the Senate have been in favor of Medicaid expansion. And three Republicans in the Senate have said, well, maybe we can't just go ahead and expand Medicaid, but we need to do something to deal with a series of problems that are coming up because of the Affordable Care Act and cutbacks on payments to hospitals and other reasons that Senator Hanger ended up being one of those three Republicans who joined the majority Democrats in the Senate in voting for a plan. Senator, by the way, welcome to the studio. Congratulations on making it.
Thank you. Good to be here, Tom.
And you're calling this plan that has been approved by the Virginia State Senate, which you voted for, Marketplace Virginia?
That's correct. Right.
What would it do, and why do you support it?
Well, let me begin, you know, and you gave a good intro there to kind of frame the whole issue, but my efforts with this began not this year, but last year when after talking to a number of people, I introduced legislation that rather than expanding Medicaid, put forth in the budget language, which required a series of reforms. And as a, and that evolved by the end of the session, we hit a compromise where instead of moving forward with any form of expansion, we put in place a Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission charged with the responsibility of developing reforms and providing oversight with the administration to reform Medicaid. And then if we judged that that had satisfactorily been accomplished, we would then move forward with some form of expanding. And, of course, that expanding needs some definition that we perhaps can get to as well. That was last year, and so we did our work, I think some very successful work working with the administration to reform the task of reforming Medicaid. Some of that's still ongoing. But then this year, we continued to work, and I've been involved in a number of capacities and conversations really all over the Southeast. I had the opportunity this past year to chair the Health and Public Safety Committee for the Southern Legislative Conference, and have worked with a number of other states, including Arkansas, that's been somewhat out in the front, and several other states that have been developing a private option rather than expanding Medicaid per se, that we would get a waiver from the federal government to use those federal dollars to provide insurance, essentially, a private insurance through private providers for this population. In a managed care environment, so that we could reduce the total cost that would be expended on providing these services.
And Senator Hanger, let me just make sure I understand that. One of the reasons that you and other people in the state Senate who support this compromise do not call it expanding Medicaid is because, in your view, you are turning to the private marketplace where people who currently fall between about 36% of poverty and 138% of poverty. That sort of donut hole, those are people who don't have any support for getting health insurance under the current situation. They would go to this private marketplace, and instead of being put on Medicaid, they would choose a private insurance plan. They might have to pay a little bit for that, but most of the cost of the plan that they choose would come from the federal government in dollars that would have originally gone to expanding Medicaid?
That is correct. And I'll be quick to note that the funds that the federal government has, obviously the federal government doesn't have any money unless they take it out of somebody's pocket. But there were a series of new taxes and fees that were put in place as a part of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Whether you like it or dislike it, it's currently the law. And those monies are already flowing to Washington. We estimate to be over $2.5 billion per year. So they're going to Washington with the intent that they're supposed to afford the opportunity for that pot of money that's going to the federal government to pay 100% of the cost for this expanded population of people in lower income levels that currently their access to health care is to, by and large, to show up at the emergency room and be treated there in a very expensive environment. So what we're proposing is in some states, this differentiation between marketplace and just strictly expanding Medicaid would be a huge difference. In Virginia, I would be quick to admit there's not a whole lot of difference between expanding Medicaid and marketplace Virginia, primarily because we are already, as a part of our reforms, requiring managed care. In other words, we are already, through our conventional Medicaid, requiring and moving the direction of all people who are Medicaid recipients, not just to be able to get fee-for-service for showing up at the emergency room, but rather to be enrolled in a managed care environment where their care is being managed for good outcomes at lower cost.
Delegate Dickie Bell, you can tell from the music that we're about to hit the break. But I know that, at least I think, that you don't like the plan that the Senate has come up with. And even more than that, you think that it's not appropriate for it to be part of negotiations over a new state budget. So I want to get your take on both of those things and then enjoy listening to you and Senator Hanger talk to each other, as well as to anybody who wants to call in at 888-WMRA-TALK when we get back in just a couple minutes. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Still here with us, Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger and Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Richard Dickey Bell. Delegate Bell, it's your turn.
Tom, there are a couple of things. Marketplace Virginia, the biggest problem I have with that is that we're still using the same money that would be used in Medicaid expansion, if I understand it correctly, which means another obligation to the growing federal government, and I have a problem with that. But the key for me, as Emmett alluded to, we in 2013, we had bipartisan support for the MIRC, the Medicaid Innovative and Reform Commission. And it was with the understanding that by doing that, we took unilateral decisions away from the governor, whoever that governor might be, the last one or the new one, and that we put it in the hands of the legislature, and that's where we would make those reforms or suggest those reforms, and that's where expansion would actually take place. I felt, and a lot of people just like me, felt that that's the way it should remain, that we shouldn't reinsert Medicaid expansion into the budget process. And now we have, and what I'd like to see more than anything else is for us to uncouple those two things. As far as the budget goes, and Emmett can correct me because he's a lot closer to the budget than I am in his capacity, but it's my understanding from our folks, our appropriations folks, that we were very close on a budget. I think one of the figures I heard was 0.1% difference in the spending amounts for a new budget. That's pretty good. That means
close in terms of every other issue, everything else that you're gonna do about funding,
exactly.
The Senate and the House almost being in total agreement, except for this question about what to do for health care for the poor.
Exactly. And that's, you know, everyone has sort of dug in. Both sides have kind of dug in. We felt like it shouldn't be in there. We'd like to uncouple it now and go on with the budget rather than hamper local government, the schools, and everyone else who can't go forward with their own budgets while we're all strung out on ours. That's the big thing for me at the moment. And I think we should have let Merck work, if you will, because they made some progress. They really did make some progress.
And Dickie, I just want to be careful because I know there are always people joining in who didn't hear the previous explanation that Merck that we're talking about here is not the drug company.
No, it's an
acronym for the board that was set up to review and improve Medicaid.
Right. It's just easier to say that than the Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission.
Right. Yeah.
So you know. that's where we are, Tom. You know, we understand that there are people that that need our assistance, and we also feel like it's the proper role of government to provide that under the right conditions.
I'm not in total disagreement with what the representations have been made so far are. On the budget, as far as how close we are, you know, we have the ability, I think, to bring closure to the budget, but we are, you know, when you're talking about a budget as large as we have, even when you're close, we are some distance apart in a number of critical areas.
Well, one of the arguments that the governor, who is in a different party than you, mm-hmm. Senator Hanger, the mm-hmm. new Democratic governor, has been making is that money for the budget is dependent in part on taking these federal monies from Washington that are related to whatever you call Medicaid expansion. Is that your view as well?
Well, there's truth to that, and that's why I think it's an appropriate conversation to have in the budget conference. We are close, except like in public education, as example, we're probably $100 million apart right now in terms of our strategies for how we would fund K-12 education. Specifically on these federal dollars free up other healthcare dollars, and I have the opportunity, if you will, to chair the MIRC, the Medicaid Innovation Reform Commission, and also I chair on the Senate Finance Committee the Health and Human Resources Subcommittee. Even with the power shift to the Democrats in the Senate, I was afforded the opportunity to continue to chair that subcommittee, which was very important to me. And so that's what has gotten me into the middle of this conversation on the other side of the fence from my good friend Delegate Bell, is because I've been immersed in this and feel a responsibility to see it through. And so, you know, we're going to have to work this out and find the common ground. What the governor has represented is fairly accurate, because there are opportunities when we expand, if you will, the level of eligibilities. Like in case of single individuals, as an example, we would have the ability to take these federal dollars, which, keep in mind, these federal dollars are not just it's not just free money. It's money that under the Affordable Care Act is being taken from Virginia taxpayers for this purpose and flowing through Washington and hopefully back to us. And so that's one of the primary reasons I want to move forward quickly now rather than slowly, is that every day that we put this off, we're losing federal dollars that will help us in our reform. But we're working on mental health, a big issue this time. And a lot of the individuals that need mental health treatment in the Commonwealth could get that if they showed up somewhere and actually had the money to pay. What is scarce is service that you can get in a private hospital or a state facility where the beds are limited when someone shows up that doesn't have the ability to pay either through insurance or out of their own resources. You also have a situation where, just because of the nature of the dynamic of extending this, that most of the state prison population would be eligible for being insured through this plan, as opposed to being paid for directly, their health care being paid for from taxpayers here in Virginia. Also, you have your community service boards that provide services in the community to a lot of these individuals that are at lower income levels in need of behavioral health services and what have you, that also would have federal dollars that would become available. So there are some trade-offs there. I would not support taking these dollars and just spreading it throughout the budget so that we could spend it somewhere else. Now, in Arkansas, they found, even though they're not nearly as advanced as we are in the Commonwealth with managed care and the ability to appropriately manage Medicaid, that when they put this program in place,
something similar to Marketplace,
where they put a private option in place, and ironically, they were able to lower taxes. They were able to actually lower the taxes that the citizens of Arkansas were paying into their general fund support because of the fact that they were accepting these federal dollars. Now, I don't anticipate that's going to be the case for us here in Virginia, but we're going to have a lot of unmet need in the area of mental health and support for our safety net for individuals that need these services that can be afforded. So it's the Merck, Doug Bell referenced the Merck and its mission, and I agree with that. The problem we're having right now is the way it was set up. There's a strong undertone of politics out there that we haven't addressed adequately yet.
Can I get back to you about that?
You bet.
Because I want to tell anybody listening, especially if you've just joined us, that health care for the poor and what should Virginia do about it is our primary focus this hour, especially since that issue is the major sticking point in the current stalemate over whether or not we're going to get a new state budget and the focus of the special session for Virginia lawmakers that's scheduled to open on Monday. But since we have Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Dickie Bell, and Republican member of the Virginia Senate, Emmett Hanger, both influential members of the General Assembly, here with us this hour, we're certainly willing to take questions or comments about anything related to their work that you might care to bring up. So the call-in phone number for the talk show is 888-WMRA-TALK, and in all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. My name, Tom Graham, by the way. Next to Richmond, Margaret Nimmo Crow. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello, Margaret.
Hi.
So everybody here knows Margaret, everybody in front of a microphone. You gentlemen, because you've both told me before how much you think of her organization, Voices for Virginia's Children. myself, because Margaret has been a guest on this program a number of times. But Margaret, my guess is that you want to talk to Emmett and Dickie about mental health.
Well, I would love to. You know, I love hearing hearing both of you talk about this, because you've both been such strong supporters of funding the mental health system. And I think if there's any topic that has been at the top of people's radar as much as whether or not we're going to expand Medicaid, it's how we're going to reform the mental health system. And so I would just like to echo what Senator Hanger was just saying about how the two issues are really intertwined. We believe that expanding health insurance coverage to the uninsured, to low-income Virginians, is integrally linked to how we're going to reform the mental health system. And you may wonder why a child advocate cares so much about that, and there are a couple of reasons, but the main one is the issue that we just touched on, which is why we believe this can't be decoupled from the budget process. And that is that between fiscal year 15 and fiscal year 22, Virginia would actually bring in about $1.6 billion, with a B, dollars that would go into the mental health system, and those are resources that we desperately need for both children and adults. So I am hoping that this can be an area of common ground, because I know how much these two legislators, as well as the General Assembly altogether, are really looking for solutions when it comes to the mental health system in Virginia. And Tom, if I could also just bring up, I think bringing some urgency to the issue of children's mental health, I just learned this morning that the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents, which is the state hospital for kids with mental health issues who are in crisis, it's in both of your districts in Stanton, they have had the busiest January and February ever. They had 73 admissions in January and 82 in February. So they have been bursting at the seams, and that really indicates a crisis in our mental health system statewide for kids, because the Commonwealth Center is treatment of last resort. It's for kids who can't get treatment anywhere else. So that really speaks to the need that we have statewide.
Margaret, you're exactly right. Also, the Commonwealth Center is the only one of its kind in the Commonwealth, and it is... Gosh, there's so few beds. I think it's a 47-bed capacity, if I remember correctly. And they have been extremely busy. I was over there yesterday, as a matter of fact. And it's incredible. Emma and I were talking off the air a little bit ago. We both feel like we've made significant strides in mental health treatment over the last couple of years, last couple of sessions, and particularly in the area of crisis intervention. And we do have a mental health crisis in Virginia. There's an education piece that we need to make people aware that crisis exists. And unfortunately, it seems to take tragedy, like we saw with Senator Deeds last year, to get the attention of the right people sometimes. But I understand what you're saying. My concerns, though, are what happens in 2022 when... Or before that, if the federal government doesn't live up to its promise, and the money if you look at this thing as a perfect piece, and that money flows to us, that's great. We have a 50-50 split with the federal government now on Medicaid. I think the president is on record as saying he'd like to see that kind of a split everywhere. There are members of Congress who've said the same thing. If we enroll another 250,000, 300,000 people, and then the feds pull the rug out from under us, we are facing a crisis of our own in terms of how to pay for that.
State Senator Emmett Hanger, the primary argument that Delegate Bell's colleagues, especially the leadership, the Republican leadership in the House, has been making is just what he was talking about. They feel we cannot trust the federal government to keep its promise to keep the money flowing from Washington. How do you feel about that?
Well, obviously we need to be leery of the federal government, but we also, and something that's being, we're kind of losing sight of these days, because I hear a lot of criticism of the federal government. The federal government is us. We, through our representatives, are the federal government. And quite frankly, the history has been that the federal government generally does, even if they're borrowing the money from the Chinese or elsewhere, does and has historically honored its spending commitments. Now, There is a concern about that because of the fact that the budget for our country is so out of balance that there could be some jeopardy in the future. Now, that is addressed, or we're anticipating that with the legislation that we've introduced, in that we would not enter into an agreement with the Medicaid providers or the funding source in Washington without an agreement through the providers that would be signing up the insurance for these individuals, that if the federal funding is reduced, then we could cancel the policies. It's just like, you know, an individual now that if they don't have the resources to pay for their insurance policy, the policy is canceled, and so that would be up to the providers. Having said that, you know, we can put in place, and we know that we can do that. So that's why it doesn't make sense for me not to take advantage of the fact that the federal dollars are there now, and you can do a lot with those federal dollars that are currently in the pot that are coming from Virginia taxpayers and to be made available to us.
Dickie Bell, quickly, does that strike you as reassuring at all?
No.
Okay, so we'll ask you more about that when we get back from the break. Margaret Nimmo Crowe, Executive Director of Voices for Virginia's Children, it is always great to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective.
Thanks so much, Tom.
We're going to continue on Virginia Insight with our discussion with two Republicans who are on different sides of the major political issue in the state capitol at the moment, what to do about health care for the poor and how it affects the state budget. This is all continuing in about 3 minutes. Augusta County Republican Dickie Bell is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates representing the 20th District, which stretches through Highland County up into Augusta and Nelson. Augusta County Republican Emmett Hanger is a member of the Virginia Senate, representing the Senate's 24th District, which stretches through Augusta County up into Rockingham, Greene, Madison, and Culpeper. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Let's go next to Grados. Joy, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Hi, Tom. My question relates to the commission that you're referring to as Merck.
Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission. Aren't you proud of me for remembering that?
Yes.
Okay, and thanks, Joy.
My question relates to my understanding from from Representative Landis, with whom I've corresponded on this subject. The idea is to get the reforms in place before you expand Medicaid. What I don't get is what kind of timeline are we looking at? With the General Assembly meeting only once annually, it would appear that if we put this off and decouple, then we're not going to be able to address this again before January with, you know, a fair amount of delay in the process. So I guess I'd like to understand, what kind of timeline is the commission on, and can things be implemented between now and the General Assembly's reconvening in January that would speed along the process and remove some of the roadblocks for the next time, assuming we have to wait?
Well, Emmett, I think it would be appropriate, as chairman of the Merck, you can respond to that probably better than I can.
Well, it's a good question. The commission was given a responsibility as kind of a gatekeeper function, in addition to developing reforms and working with the administration to put reforms in place. And we had delineated over this past year a series of reforms that we'd put them in phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three. Many of us, I think in a fairly objective manner, believe that we have accomplished successfully the reforms under phase one and phase two, which involved things like putting additional data processing in place. We're looking on integrity of programs, working toward more managed care, working toward a contract for behavioral health managed care. And those things, there, when you delineate all the subtasks in there, there were 12 to 15 tasks that we thought were accomplished successfully. Where we've had disagreement in the commission is over phase three, which where a lot of the money is going, where with long-term care and behavioral health care or long-term disability in moving forward with managed care in those areas, in which can yield us a lot of savings. We've put in place proposals for plans, but the truth of the matter is those things can't be implemented now. They're into the future, 2016, 2017, as we move forward.
So the implication based on Joy's question is that if you waited until all of that was accomplished, it would be 3 or 4 or more years before you would move forward on Medicaid expansion.
Exactly. And we're losing about two. When I say losing, we have available to us in this fund that's been created about $2 billion per year.
From the federal government.
From the federal government, which, again, is tax dollars being taken from Virginia taxpayers for this purpose. Now, getting down to the politics of it, it's a tough one because it's being heavily scrutinized and heavily lobbied on both sides. But the Senate membership has seemed to agree, and we were supposed to get to a point and vote. And the way the commission was set up, it takes a majority vote of both the senators and the House members that are on the commission in order to say move forward. We do have the gatekeeper function. What has happened is that the Senate members have thought, well, we've done enough. Let's move forward with the expansion. The House members have said, let's wait until we do more reform. And I don't have a problem with some of that either, as long as it's objective and you have metrics in place to evaluate it. The problem that I've had with that and why I'm pushing now for moving this process on is that several of the members of the House that are represented on the MERC have publicly stated that they're not going to vote for it no matter what we do with reform. So I think that the spirit of our agreement has been violated in part, and I would like to fix that some way.
Delegate Dickey Bell, any further response to Joy's question?
No, I think he covers it pretty well. The unfortunately, some people stepped out, some members of the MERC stepped out and took a rather firm stand before the work was done. But the work was being done, and there is a time lag. I don't think anybody familiar with it would deny that. So it wouldn't happen in the next 6 months. It wouldn't happen in the next year, probably, even if they met all the requirements that they've set for themselves.
Do you have a sense of what should happen for those people who fall in that hole between 36% of poverty and 138% of poverty, who are not covered by the Affordable Care Act, and because Virginia has not chosen so far to expand Medicaid, don't have the kind of coverage that the Affordable Care Act had originally intended for them?
Well, I think some of them would be covered in our safety net system with our free clinics and some various other opportunities. One thing that I need to mention, because we hear a lot about the tax money that's leaving Virginia and not coming back or that's going to Medicaid, but Virginia draws down about twice as much as we pay in now in federal taxes. So we're getting a lot of federal money back. And one of the objections to expansion of Medicaid is that we make a deeper commitment to taking federal dollars, and we have a federal government, a federal economy that's very unstable. I'm sort of on that side of it. They made promises to us. We've seen what's happened to some of the promises that were made under the Affordable Care Act. The country's $17 trillion in debt. They don't have a long-range plan for paying down that debt. Medicaid expansion will add to the debt. So I'm just not confident that it's going to work. I think if we add, the figure you hear most often is 400,000 people, but actually I understand it's probably closer to 250,000 if we enrolled them now. But you talk about having this 3-year window, and then if it doesn't work or if the federal government reneges on us, then we disenroll these folks. I wonder if anybody really believes that you can take 250,000 people off the Medicaid rolls if those things fall apart and if that really happens. I don't know of another entitlement program out there where we've done anything close to that.
Joy, thank you so much for your call. We're going next to Stanton. David, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Delegate Dickey Bell and or State Senator Emmett Hanger, please.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is simply this, that this opposition to expansion of Medicaid is purely political. It all comes down to opposition to the Affordable Care Act. There's all of the medical professionals, all of the economic guidelines point to the expansion of Medicaid. This whole issue is purely and 100% political opposition to the Affordable Care Act and anything that smacks of President Obama.
And, David, we've got a clear idea of your perspective. I apologize for cutting you short, but we're full up with calls, and I want to see if we can fit in at least a couple more. Gentlemen, before you react, let's go to Ruth in Harrisonburg. Ruth, if you could be quick, please.
Yes. I'm very concerned about a couple of things. One is, of course, it's already been said we'd be paying taxes and not getting them back. And sure, we get some money back. That's great, but I'd like to get it all back that we're entitled to. But I think there are two big problems with postponing the expansion of Medicaid. And one is financial. How much money are we losing a day? I know we're losing billions if we take a year or two. And we're losing 30,000 jobs that are going to be generated by having these health care services that are going to be delivered. But there is a more important thing, and that is the moral cost. The moral cost of saying that little children that need medical service won't get it because their family is just above 30% of poverty, but they are well below 100% of poverty. This is wrong. And when we say that it's because of the national debt getting a bit bigger and the federal government might renege, and so what are we going to do a couple years from now? In the life of a child, the next couple of years matters.
And Ruth, I apologize also for cutting you short, but we've got a good idea of your perspective. I want to give our guests a chance to respond. Gentlemen, either of you?
This is
Delegate Bill.
For one thing, I would say this to the first caller. Not every medical professional is lined up in favor of this. And I have a stack of letters from physicians, surgeons, social service directors who would argue that. So that's not really accurate to say that. Is it political? Of course it's political. Everything's political. The politics are not the reason. There are some philosophical differences here on what conservatives believe and what moderates and liberals believe. But I don't think it's politics that are separating us right now on this issue.
Senator, briefly?
Well, as Delegate Bell indicated there, you know, the politics are there and they're very obvious. The politics of Virginia don't bother me at all because we can generally debate issues and then come to a consensus, and I think we will. On this particular issue, what bothers me a lot is the nature of the conversation that's coming from the outside of Virginia, from big moneyed interests that are spending a lot of money driving misinformation in the debate. And that does bother me. So
David seemed to be saying something that I thought I'd heard you said before, that some of the opposition for doing anything that looks like expanding Medicaid is in part because those people really hate the idea of the Affordable Care Act, and they're concerned that if they move forward with this, they're doing something to support a piece of legislation they think should be repealed.
Right. Well, interestingly, if you poll, they don't dislike the Affordable Care Act as much as they dislike Obamacare, and that has to do with the national politics that they're very partisan right now. You can do polling, you know, even on the governor.
Okay. Well, let me see if we can fit in one more call before we run out of time. Mm-hmm. Ed in Harrisonburg, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Senator Hanger or Delegate Bell?
Yes, sir. I have a question about building codes. And if anybody in the state legislature is looking at adding to the building codes that you can use sort of newer or alternative building materials and designs to build a house. Right now it's rather restricted. There's a lot of things that are a lot more efficient and a lot cheaper and a lot easier to mm-hmm. build.
So making building codes more environmentally friendly, Ed, is that the essence of your question?
I mean, the environmentally friendly part, I mean, these happen to be more environmentally friendly, but also just, I mean, there's some of them that aren't as environmentally friendly, but also mm-hmm. just giving more choice for people. You could build a Cobb house. They got ones in Wales that have been around for 500 years, and all you need for that is mud, straw, and sand. And those things are pretty much free, and they're really stable and fireproof.
So, Ed, I'm getting that you are wondering if the General Assembly is doing anything about loosening up local building codes? Is that it?
loosening or adding to them. I mean, there's
okay. We're just about out of time. So, Senator,
I think adding to is a good thing, and I would say in general in Virginia we follow along with national building code standards, but we're sometimes slow to react. I'm not sure I would go back with a mud house, but there are new products that are coming along that we should be, probably be quicker. Extruded plastics and metals and different uses of glass that are modern techniques that could be introduced into the building code that make a whole lot of sense. And we generally get there, but sometimes we're very slow in getting there based on following along with national standards.
Ed, thank you so much for your call. I apologize to other people on the line that have been holding on that we've run out of time. Senator Emmett Hanger, I actually asked Dickey this question the last time he was here, so I'm going to put you on the spot with the less than 30 seconds we have left. What's the possibility we're going to get agreement on a state budget anytime soon?
I would see a strong possibility because it's our history of when we get down to the crunch, we are gentlemen, we have a legitimate differences in viewpoints, but we represent a constituency that expects us to have a balanced budget, and we've got time now. When we get back Monday, we're going to adopt a budget for this current fiscal year ending June 30th, and then we'll get busy over the next month or two, and we'll work out our differences, and all will be good.
Dickey, out of the corner of my eye, I almost thought I saw you nodding your head.
You did, and I agree with that, because I believe in our system. I believe in the way we do things in Virginia.
I'm so sorry we're out of time.
I believe we will find a common ground.
Our guests have been 20th District House of Delegates member, Republican from Stanton, Dickey Bell, plus 24th District State Senator, Republican from Mount Solon, Emmett Hanger. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you.
You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about both of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.